This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 1st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 197 and happy British Columbia Day weekend. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Welcome back Jim Mullen of TSN's Crown Gridiron Nation and President of Football Canada for The View from Bowen Island. We talk about the Tokyo Olympics, the return of the Canadian Football League, and British Columbia. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or Prime Minister Justin Trudeau really doesn't want to wait until October 16th of 2023 for the next federal election? That is the date fixed by law, the Canada Elections Act. The law also allows the Governor General the power to dissolve Parliament. There is now a new Governor General. Trudeau finally filled the vacancy that was left by Julie Payette's scandalous January resignation. Mary Simon was sworn in July 26th. Trudeau hopes that Simon will do what he says sometime in mid-August when he asks for a snap federal election. Trudeau has been hopping between provinces for campaign-style events during his so-called one-dose summer, making billions of dollars of promises and shooting campaign ads on the taxpayer dime. It's all about his desire for a majority so that he can do whatever he wants with fewer questions from Conservative leader Erin O'Toole and his lieutenant, Pitbull Pierre Poilievre. But at what cost? An unnecessary election in a pandemic is harmful to both public health and to democracy. Trudeau wants more power. He also knows that evidence of his government's pandemic mismanagement and corruption cannot stay hidden forever. He also knows that if he stays in power longer and gets a majority, it'll be harder for opponents to find that evidence and harder for them to get him out of office. Unless the Governor General or voters say something else. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Japan Times, Olympics organizers admit to wasting about 4,000 boxes of food. Tokyo Games organizers admitted to throwing away approximately 4,000 of the 10,000 pre-ordered bento boxes full of food that were to be fed to volunteers on the day of the opening ceremony. Due to the volunteers' heavy workload, they did not have a chance to eat the food, which was set to be turned into animal feed and used for biomass power generation, according to the organizing committee. The organizing committee also apologized for not making an announcement to inform athletes and officials at the game's opening ceremony to stand up before Emperor Naruhito proclaimed the start of the event. The Prime Minister and Governor of Tokyo stood up in the middle of the Emperor's declaration that the games were on. In the Taiwan News, Canada's TSN displays Taiwan flag on Olympic medal table. Taiwanese-born Canadian Charlie Wu of the Asian Canadian Special Events Association observed that many international media outlets have rectified the name for Taiwan in Olympic coverage. He noted that both Japan's NHK and France's L'Equipe refer to the Olympic team as Taiwan on their medal charts. Wu pointed out that many of Taiwan's athletes do not live in Taipei at all. The Republic of China, Taiwan, first competed in the Olympics in 1932, but in 1975, the People's Republic of China applied to participate in the Games and insisted that the Republic of China be decertified in the process, meaning that Taiwan is known as Chinese Taipei, according to the IOC. In the Anchorage Daily News, Seaward erupts in joy as hometown swimmer Lydia Jacoby wins Olympic gold medal. Hundreds of residents gathered at the Alaska Railroad Terminal to watch Jacoby compete in the 100-meter breaststroke. They streamed inside a little before the race, holding foam fingers emblazoned with Go Lydia. The town of 2700 was plastered with praise for Jacoby, the first Alaskan to swim in the Olympics. After the race, a caravan of vehicles, including a group shouting USA repeatedly from the bed of a pickup truck, moved down 4th Avenue as a lone runner ahead, who was clad in
flag boxers and socks with Lydia scrawled across his chest, waved an American flag. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Salem Statesman Journal, state employees eligible for hazard pay for working during pandemic. State employees in Oregon who worked mandatory in-person hours during the pandemic will be eligible for one-time COVID hazard payments after new tentative labor agreements were struck. Workers who logged between 480 and 1,039 hours between March 8, 2020 and June 30, 2021 are expected to receive $1,050, while those who worked more than 1,040 hours are in line for $1,550. This applies to all workers, whether they were union members or not. In the Seattle Times, how the city council left Seattle in a no-man's land on crime. Seattle's police force has lost 270 officers in 18 months. Last fall, city council cut $46 million from its budget. Through June, there were 232 shots fired incidents reported in the city, up 41% from last year. King County Council approved more than $42 million in new funding to cut the court's backlog. There are currently more than 6,400 pending felony cases in the court system. Homicide, rape, domestic violence, shootings, and robbery have also increased from an estimated 1,700 cases per month pre-pandemic to 2,700 last month. In Czech news, DFO hands out multiple tickets in Southern Gulf Islands enforcement blitz. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans said it checked 76 vessels, 187 anglers in an area ranging from Powell River to Victoria. On July 9th and 10th, officials found a number of violations, including the retention of undersized and protected fish, overfishing crab and rockfish, using barbed hooks while salmon fishing, and boating through interim sanctuary zones for southern resident killer whales. And these headlines in the Breaker.News. Pandemic ups and downs, but mostly downs, for BC Crown corporations and hospital authorities. Horgan's pandemic power grab cost almost $52 million, Elections BC. Trudeau double no-no in the land of Triple O. Campaigning PM flouts provincial and local laws. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. My guest on the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast this week is Jim Mullen of TSN's Crown Gridiron Nation and President of Football Canada. He joins us again for The View from Bowen Island. This time we talk about the Tokyo Olympics, the return of the Canadian Football League, and British Columbia on British Columbia Day weekend. It's time again for The View from Bowen Island. Beautiful Bowen Island in Howe Sound, British Columbia, near Horseshoe Bay, West Vancouver. First off, I want to talk about the Tokyo 2020 plus one Olympics. Jim, you're very familiar with Japan, more familiar than most with Japan, having lived and worked there. These are the games that I say are in the land of the rising case counts. The IOC exerted its power over Japan in a pandemic, delayed it by a year, but decided to go ahead nonetheless this year during also the hottest time of the year. There have been daily records for host city case counts. Should these games have gone ahead?
Well, let's unpack a few things from that. First of all, the weather at this time of year in Tokyo. I mean, obviously, most of us here in British Columbia went through the heat dome that rolled through here about a month ago, and out here on Bowen Island we had a nighttime low at about 1:30 in the morning of 32 degrees. The only place that compared to that in my lifetime is Tokyo at the beginning of August. the idea that they are having this at this time of year in a place that is notoriously a sauna is somewhat beyond belief for me. I understand the logistical challenges of trying to get any sort of event and any sort of international event going during COVID. But I think the other thing to understand here is the American marketplace, and that the IOC likely wanted to avoid September because it's the start of NFL season. It's the time for pennant chases. it's you know, training camps for the NHL startup. They'd be going head to head if they started this at a reasonable time against large American sports leagues. So if you want to know why the athletes are struggling in outdoor sports or insufferable heat, it's because of scheduling, as opposed to 1964, which I believe was held much later in the year when it was held in Tokyo the first time. The other part of this is that, you know, from a distance, and I have friends in Japan that I talk to on a regular basis. I'm shocked and amazed about Japan's response to the pandemic. If there is a country that you can motivate practically in unison on any demanding subject, it is Japan and the Japanese people. And for the Japanese government to be asleep at the switch on this is a long alarming, but also knowing the Japanese culture, they want to do things the Japanese way. And so if there aren't trials on vaccines that are conducted by the Japanese, if the data isn't gathered by the Japanese, if it hasn't gone through their filters, they're not going to follow through on it with the same protocols that the global community follows through on it. And therein lies the issue with slow vaccination rates in Japan. The one thing about that culture is that, you know, based upon the decisions that they make on the island, they can be rather inflexible with the in comparison to the global community. I remember being there in 99, 2000, 2001. When they ran on a totally different cellular system, they were essentially, we were on VHS, they were on beta. they had a better delivery system, but they would not integrate into essentially what the global standard was. Smartphones eventually, you know, collapsed that resistance. For the sake of their people, their government needed to show more flexibility in the midst of a global pandemic. And it's unfortunate that it has bled over into the execution of the games. But, you know, as an old good friend of mine once said to me very early on in the broadcast industry, follow the money, then that will give you your answers.
Is this an even bigger red flag for anybody who thinks that Vancouver should bid again for a Winter Olympics for 2030?
Well, it's the rights that local and provincial and federal governments give up to the IOC. I think that's what we've seen at play here. You're not autonomous when you're dealing with the IOC. They assert a lot of control in terms of hosting agreements. I think that was the Horgan government's initial reticence to involve themselves with FIFA, who have far-reaching elements in their agreements too, in terms of hosting agreements. So approaching this with caution is, I think, paramount, especially from the provincial side. If this were to move forward, the one thing about the Winter Games is that there really isn't a need for a lot of rebuild of infrastructure around another Winter Games proposal. And I would suggest the same thing applies if Calgary were to step up as well. So in terms of that sort of investment, that's a good thing. The costs of security, which we still don't know, the overall costs of what the games are, because we still don't know. A lot of that information is hidden from us. I'd like to see that lifted so we get an accurate picture of what the costs are of staging another Winter Olympic Games here. I think the only big plus in this is that we won't take a soak on infrastructure costs, at least hopefully so.
And coming up near and dear to your heart, of course, is Canadian football. The weekend that the Olympics end is the weekend that the Canadian Football League season starts, the crossover from the greatest world's spectacle of sport to Canada's greatest gift to summer sports, although people in lacrosse would have a debate over that. But Canadian Football League season is finally back after the cancellation last year. What are your thoughts and expectations on this upcoming season?
I think the football is going to be really sloppy out of the gate. I think you park your teams for a year. I think you have a rash of retirements just before training camp, and you have no exhibition games. I'm not a big fan of exhibition games personally, but if there was ever a need for a set of exhibition games or even controlled scrimmages, this would be the year for it. The one thing about sloppy football, though, is that it can be exciting when it's wide open and it's full of turnovers and return kicks for touchdowns. Can also be critically boring if there's a lot of two and outs. So look for some pretty sloppy football, I think, through the first 4 to 6 weeks. It's good that the brand is getting back up on television. It's good that that stadiums are opening up. I am worried about the Delta variant cutting into the back end of the season and the league having to make adjustments in specific markets. When you see an R rate of 142 in Alberta, where the season is really starting, in Edmonton, Calgary, and Regina, that's a concern on the prairies. I don't think it's a straight line to get to the Grey Cup in the second week of December in Hamilton. And I do believe that because of COVID, the way people make plans for the national championship, I think a lot of people will elect to stay home. I think the festival will be somewhat diminished. But I think in this country, we have some realistic expectations this year around the sport. And we'd just like to see it back. I know from a Football Canada perspective, our thoughts are, we're successful when the CFL is successful. There's a strong patriotic pull to having the sport out there, and it's another level of participation and aspiration for some of our male athletes at an older age. So, I'm eagerly anticipating it. I think my expectations are all over the map. And, from a Canadian perspective, I'm happy that Nathan Rourke is now the backup quarterback in BC behind Mike Riley, born in Victoria, grew up in Burlington, and starred at Ohio University, where he won two Cornish trophies. So it's nice to see two Canadian quarterbacks, Michael O'Connor out of UBC, also in a supporting role in Calgary as well. So I think there's some good storylines out there if they want to pursue them. And another thing, too, is I'm glad the XFL talk is going away, at least until the day after Grey Cup, when I fully anticipate that sort of talk will start again.
Yeah, the Rourke and Riley combination, a different kind of R&R coming to BC Place August 19th when the Dome reopens and the Lions are back in front of a crowd. Could be the biggest crowd here in British Columbia for well over a year. And it could be the first time British Columbians actually get together to celebrate something. There was no celebration on July 20th, which was the 150th anniversary of British Columbia joining Confederation. That day quietly came and went, that day of history. This is BC Day weekend. What are your thoughts about where BC has been, where BC is today, and where BC is going in the future?
Well, where BC has been, especially over the last 15 years, with the challenges that we've had on the housing side and the foreign investment side within the housing market, it's a real challenge for people at the ground level to reach that Western dream of owning a home and having disposable income and those sorts of basics of life. I think there are a lot of challenges out there for people across the province. I'm generally happy with the government that we have right now, quite frankly. I think they're doing the best that they can through maybe the most challenging chapter in this province's history. You know, literally overlapping emergencies and states of emergency. You know, it's very discouraging to bear the full brunt of climate change, knowing that in this province we now have five seasons. We have winter, spring, summer, smoke, and fall. And it's a major adjustment for people. I have friends up on Anarchist Mountain right now, building fire barricades around structures. I think we're all about 1 degree of separation around the full impact of what's happened, in the forest. And quite frankly, you know, the climate change is a main driver of this, but also the way we've managed forests in this province over the last 20 to 30 years is also a major concern. There's a lot of fuel out there because, the previous government cut funding to forest management, and now we're paying the price for it, and there's a lot of catch up to do. Those traditional elements of the province, forestry, fishing, the resource industries, I think are at a point of reckoning right now. Whether you're talking about fish farms, whether you're talking about some of the impacts of the mining industry, and the current state of forestry, I think there are some hard decisions that need to be made as we move into the future, about how we choose to manage our own resources in this province. So, we are positioned very well, I think, for the future in this province. I do worry about an economic cold war. Somebody referred to it as a hot peace right now between ourselves and China, ourselves in the West and China. I think there may be some more benefits of that in terms of a cooling of the housing market. If wages aren't keeping up for the average working Joe, I think housing has to come back down to them in the future. So, a diplomatic tension and corporate tension at a global level might actually be a benefit to BC in an odd sort of way, to make things affordable again in this province. So it's complex. I do not envy anyone, whether it's the government, whether it's the opposition, trying to manage themselves through this this very turbulent time in this province. But I have confidence when I look across the board right now, even into the opposition benches at this stage.
That was my guest, Jim Mullen of TSN's Crown Gridiron Nation and President of Football Canada, joining us again for The View from Bowen Island. Bowen Island, British Columbia, near Horseshoe Bay in West Vancouver.
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the firefighters in the front lines of rural wildfires around BC, and the doctors, nurses, paramedics, and firefighters helping those overcome by heat in urban BC. Thank you for your service, especially on BC Day Long Weekend. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 1st, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 1st in 1981, MTV launched with the song Video Killed the Radio Star? 40 years later, MTV isn't what it used to be, but radio isn't dead yet. It only changed into satellite, streaming, and podcasts. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.